first time since 2003. They will next play Illinois in the annual Bragging Rights game in St. Louis tomorrow night. Illinois received a few votes to make honorable mention. Tonight in college basketball, Eastern Illinois hosts Chicago State. The NFL's oldest rivalry continues tonight at Soldier Field. The Bears will take on the Packers. Green Bay beat Chicago 37-3 last month at Lambeau Field, and revenge would keep alive the Bears' very slight chance of making the playoffs. And Illinois defensive back Vontae Davis says he's decided to skip his senior year and turn pro. The three-year starter says he's decided to enter next year's NFL draft, and experts say he is likely a high first-round pick. And that's sports.
You know Dasher, and Dancer, and Prancer, and Vixen, Comet, and Cupid, Donner, and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all?
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. I'm Tom Rogers. You know, Christmas wouldn't be Christmas without certain movies and TV shows, and among them is the 1964 classic Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. That last show was produced by Arthur Rankin Jr. and Jules Bass, the same folks who created a slew of other holiday specials, including Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Frosty the Snowman, and The Year Without a Santa Claus. Rick Goldschmidt is a biographer and official historian for Rankin Bass Productions. He's written extensively about Rankin Bass and has just released the third printing of his book, The Enchanted World of Rankin Bass. He also blogs about the company. At his blog, the address is Enchanted World of Rankin Bass. That's all one word, enchantedworldofrankinbass.blogspot.com. AM580's Jason Croft talked with Goldschmidt recently and asked why he thinks these shows have stood the test of time.
Well, there's a lot of reasons, and that's why I had to write a book about it. Actually, my second book, The Making of Rankin Bass's holiday classic, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, goes into how the show was made up. And it worked on so many different levels, but the core of the whole thing and all of their specials is the writing has to be really good. And Romeo Muller wrote these shows, and he wrote them in such a way that they're timeless. And there's a lot of heart and warmth in these things that doesn't exist in today's entertainment, except if for the Pixar films. They know writing is the key, and that's where their focus is. They don't go for the cheap, you know, farting jokes that you see in a Shrek or, you know, something like that. So that's really the heart of the matter is the heart. And that's why they've lasted so long.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the creators of these shows, Arthur Rankin Jr. and Jules Bass?
Well, Arthur Rankin met Jules Bass back in the 50s when he was the art director at ABC. Jules was working for an advertising agency and was also a jingle writer. And they decided to match their talents and start a company called Videocraft International. And back in the early days when they started this company, they were financing their projects themselves, taking out loans from the bank, and they produced this series called The New Adventures of Pinocchio and The Tales of the Wizard of Oz. And it wasn't until 1964 that they really found what they needed to do with their company, and that was make television, holiday television specials like Rudolph. And once Rudolph became a huge success because it was the highest rated Christmas special ever, they just continued on doing these specials, and they did some 36 television specials. They've also done, you know, a dozen feature films and a lot of TV series like the Jackson 5 show and the Osmond show and King Kong and a whole bunch of different things. So they branched out, and in 64, the General Electric Company financed everything and started an entertainment division called Tomorrow Entertainment, and that really is what financed all of Arthur Rankin and Jules' projects.
Talk a little bit about the production process in making Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. This was all stop-motion photography, correct?
Right. The way it worked is, and to put it in a nutshell, they created the show in New York. Romeo Muller was a writer in New York. Maury Laws wrote the music. Arthur had some designers like Paul Coker and Jack Davis who worked for Mad Magazine. They were in New York back then. So all of the, and Don Duga would do the storyboards. So all of these guys were New Yorkers, and they would send the animation out to Japan where they would do this stop motion. And Arthur Rankin knew the Japanese culture and oversaw the production in Japan and got the top talents in animation in Japan to work on this stuff. A guy named Tad Moshinaga is considered to be the father of stop motion in Japan. So he was like at the head of the team. And then the voice actors, for the most part, especially on the early stuff like Rudolph and Willie McBean and his Magic Machine and a bunch of other things they did back then, were in Canada. And they did that because in Canada, the union was agreeable to a two-year buyout, which saved Rankin Bass money. And it was not only an economic thing, but it was also that they were super talented in Canada. Radio went on longer in Canada than it did in the States. They did a lot of old-time radio type things. So all of these voice actors were right out of radio and super talented people, and that's why the voices in Rudolph are so distinct. And that's kind of how it worked. So it was a Canadian, Japanese, New York thing. And when you look at it, it looks totally American, but you know, the Japanese had a lot to do with the way that animation looked.
Well, I did want to talk about the design of the characters and the scenes, because when you look at it, there's something very old-fashioned about how the characters are designed and the settings, but there's also something very mod about it, very 1960s, you know,
right,
pop art. Talk a little bit about how that all came together. You talked about Jack Davis, an illustrator for Mad Magazine, working on these. Where did they get their inspiration for the design work for all this?
Well, I will say this. If Arthur Rankin and I have one thing in common, it's the love of good art, and that continues to today. I'm an illustrator. My degree's in illustration, and he knew talent immediately as far as who he needed and wanted for these shows. And he had a guy named Tony Peters who did that early mod-looking stuff. And that's some of my favorite stuff, is the early kind of UPA, real simplistic, stylish stuff. And that's where they got that mod look. He was a New York illustrator. And then when he branched out with Paul Coker, he had a very distinctive style, and that translated over to the animation, especially in Frosty and with the Heat Miser and Snow Miser, and some of his Santa Claus designs are very unique. Yeah. Paul Coker is almost the quintessential Rankin Bass illustrator. And then Jack Davis is my favorite illustrator, and I think he's... He's Arthur Rankin's, too, and he had a whole different look to his art, and they use that quite well in Mad Monster Party, which is my second favorite Rankin Bass show.
And so that's a Halloween show.
Yeah, it's a feature film, actually, and it's an amazing DVD, the quality of it, and I did a book that's in the DVD. It's an amazing project. It inspired Tim Burton to do, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas and The Corpse Bride, and all the stuff that he does is kind of out of Mad Monster Party, and it's very influential. And some other illustrators Arthur Rankin used was Al Hirschfeld, you know, the famous Broadway mm-hmm. cartoonist. He used him in The Daydreamer, which was another feature film they did. And then this other artist for Mad Comedians, Bruce Stark. He was a very stylish cartoonist from that era. So, I mean, he chose nothing but the best artists to do these cartoony type things, and that's why they look so good.
Well, we talked about the Halloween, the monster show, and of course the Christmas shows, but they did other holiday themed specials as well. Some that you might not expect.
Right.
So tell us about a couple of the other Rankin Bass holiday specials.
Well, The Little Drummer Boy is one of their great ones. And The Little Drummer Boy Book 2, I think that won an Emmy, or at least it was nominated for one. And that is a, you know, ties in religion and what the holiday's all about. So that's a special, you know, Rankin Bass show. Another favorite of the fans is Nestor the Long-Eared Donkey, which is kind of reminiscent of Bambi, but Romeo Muller really wrote some nice things in that one, and they actually won a Peabody for a show that wasn't a holiday special, and that's The Hobbit. And then they did Return of the King, too, which somewhat inspired the movie makers of all of those Lord of the Rings films that were so big a few years back. So they've had quite an influence on the entertainment world. And really, if you look at my first book, nothing that they did was weak, you know. Nothing was a throwaway kind of project. They always put quality into what they did, and they never really lost that quality through all of those holiday specials. And that's why, you know, ABC Family runs them all month long, and it's basically the Rankin Bass channel, you know.
Well, a couple of years ago, the actual puppets for Santa and Rudolph were found in an attic, and they were in bad shape. Tell us a little bit about that story and the status of the puppets today.
Right. I actually put some of the pictures of the restored puppets in my third printing of my first book, The Enchanted World of Rankin Bass, which I'm getting out now myself in a hardcover. And the puppets we had on tour with us for the last two or three years. And the way they were found was one of Arthur Rankin's secretaries actually took home the Rudolph cast of puppets and used them at Christmas time as part of their family decorations and kept them in an attic. And the only two that survived were Santa and Rudolph. And those are the two best to survive, although I'd like to see all of them. If any two were going to survive it, it's great that those two did. And they were purchased in auction and then restored by Time and Space Toys and Screen Novelties out in Hollywood. And Screen Novelties, I'm friends with those guys. They do Robot Chicken, and they did this Ray Harryhausen short that was not finished years ago that completely blew me away, called Tortoise and the Hare. It looked like it was from the 1940s, but it was new. And I knew they could restore Santa and Rudolph, so they did. And we brought them out to various places the last couple of years so all the fans could see them and enjoy them. And it's been a really, really neat neat side project of everything that I do.
Your book, The Enchanted World of Rankin Bass, is going to be in its third printing here soon. But you are also the official historian for Rankin Bass. How does one get that gig?
Well, when I started this whole thing, I did it out of love of their shows because there was nothing available about who Arthur Rankin and Jules Bass were. So that's why I did it. And being an illustrator, I was able to lay out a really neat book. And I did a lot of the illustrations myself. And that was all I thought I was going to be doing, you know, was doing a book and then continuing with my illustration work. But all of a sudden, there came all these products from my book. I had mentioned in the book with all the merchandising that they really didn't do any Rudolph and they really didn't do any Frosty stuff, and they should do it. So I got a call from CVS and Stuffins, this company that was making beanie bag dolls, and it just exploded from there. I mean, the interest in Rankin Bass went up, you know, 1,000%, and every year I have been doing various things that I never thought I'd be doing and I never thought I'd be talking about, and that includes, you know, radio interviews, TV, book signings, DVD, producing DVDs and CDs, and designing figurines for UNESCO. I did a lot of that just after my first book, and I helped with some of the action figures, and that's how I became the historian, because there was no one there to do that. There was no one saving the history of Rankin Bass, and the stuff was getting thrown away and not talked about for, you know, some 20 years until I came along. So it's been interesting. It's a fun thing to do, and I'm so happy to be associated with it because it's such a wholesome, great quality thing. And then I'm able to give credit to these guys who deserve credit that no one else would have given credit to.
Well, if people want to learn more about Rankin Bass and all the great shows they did, or you have a blog as well, I hear. So if people want to look at this stuff online, where should they go?
Well, I update my blog every day, so that's the best place to go, and that's enchantedworldofrankinbass.blogspot.com, or you can get there from rankinbass.com and just click on the news, the most recent news.
That was Rick Goldschmidt, the official historian and biographer for Rankin Bass Production. He talked with AM580's Jason Croft.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from CarX Auto Services, locally owned and operated, offering complete auto and tire repair services at their three Champaign locations at 901 East University, 906 West Bradley, and 2216 South Neal. Open 6 days a week.
Earth and sky.
There aren't any other organisms that I know of that do this interesting little trick.
You're listening to Gary Strobel, professor of plant sciences at Montana State University. He's talking about a fungus that